Well, once again, everybody, thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, October 30th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me on Halloween Eve here as two guests join me. Hopefully more treats than tricks on today's show. The first, Brian Leonard, professional handicapper from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat Game 7 of the World Series, talk a little bit of NBA and some of the early season observations for Brian, then get into a couple of college football games and a couple of NFL games here for this weekend. Second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds, VSiN host and contributor to the Point Spread Weekly Newsletter, will join me. We'll chat with him about his thoughts on the start of the NBA season, get some college basketball insights from him, then also take a look at the football card here for this weekend. Over at bangthebook.com, we're doing all of that stuff, covering everything for you. That's why we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. NBA, NHL, college football, NFL, soccer, golf, tennis, NASCAR, UFC, esports. You name it, we've got it over at bangthebook.com. We've got some college basketball stuff coming your way here for the start of the season on Tuesday as well. So plenty of good things from a very strong group of writers. Make sure you head on over there and check all of that out. And also, probably tomorrow, I would say, I'll be putting together a Breeders' Cup Classic preview for you. I think the post-draw is today for the set of races at Santa Anita. So we'll talk about the Breeders' Cup Classic here as well. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200, is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today, and our leadoff hitter, appropriately enough, as we begin with Game 7, is Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Busy day for myself, and hopefully we can get a lot of information out to you, not only this podcast, but our videos we do over at WagerTalk. And an excited day. We've got a few extra people in from out of town this week, so we've got some soccer we're going to talk about. A lot of sports we normally don't own those videos, so I'm excited to do it, and hopefully we can get a lot of winners for people this weekend.
Well, that's certainly the goal here and certainly the hope, and let's see if we start with one in Game 7 of the World Series. Max Scherzer, assuming he's going to be good to go, threw yesterday in a side session, said he was fine. He'll go up against Zach Greinke here in the winner-take-all Game 7 of the World Series. It's been Washington money here so far. Houston opened in the minus 150, minus 145 range out there in the marketplace. Now Houston down in the low minus 130s for this one. First and foremost, Brian, do you agree with the line move here?
I think I do. I think the line right now is where it should be. My concern is I have concerns about both starting pitchers. Scherzer, because of the way he's been in and out and in and out of the lineup, not feeling well every day. They even talked about another game yesterday when he started warming up, that at least he was feeling good yesterday. We'll see what happens today. And I agree with that. You know, I'm assuming he's going to come out and he's going to pitch well, because of all the medical staff that they have at that level. But you don't really know. You don't know until he gets on the mound. And as for the Greinke standpoint, when was the last time that we trusted Zach Greinke in a pressure situation? He's been a great pitcher in his career, but we've already seen, you know, when he pitches in a big, when he pitches in LA and he pitches in big games, that he has struggled a little bit. And a lot of that has been, you know, what he's fought his entire career. And that's, he's not good with crowds. He doesn't like any of that. And so that's something you've got to take into your handicapping here. And, you know, these teams, and we've seen this already, especially Houston's done a terrific job of getting deep in the account of these starting pitchers. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all, especially from the Houston standpoint, that we see Urquidy or one of the other starters come in after three innings or whatever, and they just say to Greinke, go out there and give us what you got as good as you can for now, because it's, you know, it's the last game of the series. Every pitcher is available. That's something you like when you're playing an under. But This is the third time a lot of these guys have seen these pitchers, second and third time, and I think I give an advantage to the offense tonight. If you know, I'm going to pass on the game, but I'm going to keep an eye on in-game betting and possibly get a play on the offense. These offenses in this series have matched up very well, in my opinion, against these dominant starting pitchers, and we've got some of the best starting pitchers in baseball in this series. So usually you would feel the home team would have more of a slight edge in game sevens, because we talk about that all the time, but it really hasn't panned out that way as much in baseball, at least lately. We'll have to see how it goes. There's plenty of other games on the board. I mean, you don't have to bet baseball, but I've had a great baseball season, but I find myself passing a lot in this World Series.
Yeah, I can't blame you for that. And, you know, as I break this one down, obviously you worry about the health factors for Scherzer. You worry about Greinke in a big spot. And, you know, he kind of battled and bobbed and weaved through 4 2/3 in his first start here in the World Series. We'll see if he's forced to do that again. What'll be so interesting to me is how the two managers handle this game. Because, as you said, really everybody except for Strasburg and Verlander available to these managers here tonight. We know we're going to see Patrick Corbin. We know we're going to see Gerrit Cole. It's just a matter of when those guys actually come into the game. And then what happens after that? You know, how long do you push Gerrit Cole or Patrick Corbin in relief? You know, Corbin, I think, in a little bit better of shape than Cole, given that, you know, Corbin is a guy that has already relieved here in this postseason. I think it's something that he'll be a little bit more comfortable with. But then you look at Washington. You know, what's your confidence level in Sean Doolittle? I think it's pretty high. What about Daniel Hudson? Do you have anybody else besides those two guys? If I'm Washington, the answer is no. So I think you've got to push Corbin as hard as you can. If Scherzer runs into trouble or some discomfort pops up, I think for Houston, again, with their back end of the bullpen, maybe a little bit better equipped, but this will be a game where the managers can really have a tremendous impact in terms of putting their guys in positions to succeed. And I'm really interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah, this is one of the few game sevens that, to me, are pretty equally matched. It's hard to find an edge in this contest, but it's been a hell of a series. I mean, I've enjoyed watching it. The end of the baseball season, you know. Well, college basketball starts on Tuesday, so one handicap sport ends, and we've got another one coming up. So never ending in this industry.
Last thing I'll ask you about here, you know, obviously both of us Indians fans, you've got Michael Brantley and Joe Smith for the Astros. You've got Asdrubal Cabrera and Yan Gomes for the Nationals. As a Tribe fan here, looking at some of our former boys out there, who are you rooting for to get that World Series ring?
It's interesting that you say this, because I watch the games with my wife, because she's a huge baseball fan. And 1 minute she's cheering for one team, the next minute she's cheering for the other. And I said, what are you doing? She goes, well, I want our Indians players to do well. I'd love to see Michael Brantley win a championship. He's one of the classiest guys in baseball. Everybody I know that knows him just loves him. Nothing against any of the other guys, but I've got a soft spot for Brantley in my heart. And, you know, he did what he had to do, and I can't blame him. You know, the Indians weren't going to pay him. And plus, being an Indians fan, it's also nice to have the thoughts in the back of your mind that the following year you can knock off the World Series champions. I don't think the Indians are going to do it unless they make some moves that we don't know about or expect. But, I guess that's the way I'm looking at it.
All right. Fair enough. I've kind of gone back and forth. I mean, I've always loved Asdrubal Cabrera and, you know, Yan Gomes as well. But like you said, it wouldn't be bad to see Brantley get one either. So, hey, you know what? I'm hoping for a good game. I'm hoping for a lot of drama here tonight. And I'm also hoping that next year I can get back to that feeling of living and dying with every pitch in the playoffs, because I wasn't sure how much I would miss it until I went without it. And it's really hard when you've had a team that's been in the playoffs, and this is true of any sport and, you know, fan of any team, it's really hard when they've been in the playoffs and played those high leverage types of games. It's hard to get into the regular season, and you get to this point in time and you really miss it. And so I'm hoping the Indians can figure some things out and get back there next year.
Yeah. We're finding the same thing out here in Las Vegas with our Golden Knights. We've been spoiled the first two seasons. And now, you know, it used to be when people would beg you for extra tickets. Now you can't give them away in some instances. Yeah, we're getting spoiled out here in Las Vegas, and I hate to see it because there's so many teams out there in hockey that have struggled all these years, and their fans are so diehard. I'm a little bit upset about what's going on out here in Vegas, but maybe it's just in my mind. Who knows? They still sell out every game.
All right, so something we want to talk about here a little bit today is the NBA. I know you've been doing quite a bit of work here in the NBA. The NBA season, a week old here tonight, last week, opening night, I think was on Tuesday. So I guess a little more than a week old now at this point in time. But what have you seen so far? What are some of the takeaways you've got with about a week's worth of action?
Yeah, so far this season, there's been some surprise teams, obviously. I've been very impressed by Atlanta. I did use Atlanta yesterday, and obviously Trae Young gets injured in the first and is out of the game, and we end up losing that game. But Atlanta's been playing very good ball. A lot of the teams that people expected to perform very well, the Philadelphias, the Denvers, they've come out a little bit slow. I'm actually surprised the Lakers have gelled so well early on in the season. I think a lot of that may have to do with the teams they've been playing. Once they play, you know, well, they struggled against the Clippers. Once they play better teams, they'll be exposed a little bit early on. But normally when you get players who dominate the ball like the Lakers have, it's going to take them a while to get going and start playing together. But they've been somewhat of a surprise. Golden State came back and took no mercy the last time out. But, you know, I liked Golden State coming into the season for their starters, but that bench on that team is one of the weakest, and it's going to be very tough for Golden State in this season when your best player is small and, in my regards, a little bit fragile. You could see Golden State really fall off if Curry is not 100%. Portland's played very good ball so far. This is a team a lot of people wrote off because of the changes they made in the offseason. I've been impressed with Portland. So it's been a nice season. Toronto, other than game one where they had the big comeback, but that was a ring ceremony game. I like to bet against those kind of teams. So Toronto surprised me a little bit. And yeah, it's been an exciting season so far. We've been able to make a little bit of money thus far out of the gate. And in most cases, we're on the right side. Sometimes we get the injuries that cost us or just a poor performance. But so far, I'm feeling pretty good about the way I'm looking at the NBA so far.
Something that's been interesting to me here is that the under 30-23-1 so far, which is kind of surprising because early on in the season, a lot of teams play with a heightened pace. You know, they're all fresh. They're all ready to go. So the pace generally tends to be a little bit quicker. And also we're seeing, you know, some of the regular defensive juggernauts struggling a little bit on that end of the floor. I mean, Utah's played very, very good defense. They've got an interesting game tonight against the Clippers, but you know, a team like the Spurs giving up over 114 points per game. We've seen Boston kind of be up and down a little bit. Milwaukee giving up 118 points per game, although they're also playing at the fastest pace in the NBA here so far. But I thought that was kind of interesting. I sort of felt like there would be more overs than unders early on in the year, but thus far the odds makers have done a pretty good job with totals.
Well, when you're rested, defense, I happen to like teams that are rested from a defensive standpoint. So far, the teams haven't had, you know, too many tough road trips and all. We're starting to get into some now. So I think the scoring will be up just because you don't have your defensive feet behind you. But, I don't do a lot with totals. Most of my, just about all my plays are sides. If I find a total, I will give it out. But my first inkling is to play the sides in these games. And, I hadn't noticed that, but I'll keep an eye on it.
Do you ever tease the NBA?
No. There's certain situations where if you can get you don't tease, but if you can buy points at a certain number and you're already getting an advantage and you're going through the five area or whatever, I know some pros that do that kind of thing. But for the most part, the only thing I ever tease is NFL. Don't do any college football. Don't do any basketball. So I know people who do it. I'm not going to give away the secrets, but it's been a few years since I've talked to these guys, so I don't know if the value is still there or not.
So in terms of your NBA betting approach here, are you looking mostly for scheduling type spots, or, you know, are you finding that maybe some teams just have mismatches against certain opponents?
Well, it's very similar to what I do in other sports, where I look for teams who outperformed the final of the previous game. For example, team like in college football, I look for teams who should have won the game and yet didn't. And all people look at is they see that they've lost. Now, basketball is a little bit different because you got an 82-game sample size, and game by game doesn't matter as much as it does in football. But in college football, when you've got 12 games as your sample size, and people see a team winning when they didn't deserve to win, that is something that I think we could take advantage of. And I've had a lot of success doing that this year, is betting on the teams that are coming off of a loss that they actually, when you dig down into the numbers, were the better team. And then betting against the team that won. I mean, take a look at just for first game on the board in the NBA, the New York Knicks. New York Knicks won that game last time out, and they pulled the upset. But if you look at that game, they were down. The average average spread in that game was 9 for the opposition. And they came back, and they ended up winning that game by like 7 or something. So people are going to look at that game and say, hey, you know, the Knicks came back at 1-3 or whatever. Maybe they're not as bad as what we thought. Well, if you dig deep into those games, they were completely outplayed in every game they played so far this season. So there may be some advantage on going against the Knicks tonight. There's a few spots on the card. You know, Houston's been able to win, and they haven't been overly impressive. Chicago was the game that played the Knicks, and Chicago dominated that game and lost. They play Cleveland, a team that they could take out some frustrations on. I put that up as a free play today. Well, I've got Chicago. So just early on trying to look at teams a little bit different way other than, you know, just the final box score. I don't have time to watch every single game, so I go through the stats after the games are over. And there's certain places out there on the internet where you can get more of a game flow type of thing. And I think that's the way to take a look at it.
Well, I guess one final question here in the NBA, and then we'll flip over to college football side of things, is, you know, in football, we can look at something like turnover margin, you know, and sort of say, well, that team was -4 in turnovers. They shouldn't have won that game, or, you know, they shouldn't have lost by as much as they did. Turnovers played such a big impact. What set of statistics are you looking for to sort of, you know, quantify that point in the end, or qualify that point in the NBA of, you know, that team shouldn't have lost that game, or that team shouldn't have won that game? Are there specific stats you point to?
Yeah, like I said, I'll take a look at the average spread as the game goes on, that kind of thing. Obviously, if you've got a, you know, 20-point favorite, it's going to take a long time before they get up to winning by 20 points. But, you know, if you've got a team that is in a pick'em range, and the entire game they're down by 5 points, and then all of a sudden they go on a 10-0 run at the end of the game, most people will note that, hey, they covered that spread, they won that game straight up. Whereas, you know, 46 out of the 48 minutes of the game, they've trailed by 5. So that's something to take a look at. Also in the NBA and college basketball, I'm more of a situational where if a team is shooting lights out, especially from three, I tend to fade that team in the second half or things like that in live betting. You know, teams always revert back to the norm in the long run. And I find a lot of things that I do, if a team gets off to just a great start shooting threes in the first half, you tend to fade them in the second half. And it does work out pretty well. I give out second half plays. I can't sell them to clients. Obviously, you just don't have enough time. So I give them out on Twitter for free. So if you follow us at B Leonard Sports on Twitter, you can get those free plays. And it's just something you take a look at if you have a chance to watch the game, which I say, you don't have a chance to watch them all. You can see how open these guys are on the threes, and it's a little bit opposed to without watching the game, you can't really tell, but there's so much luck involved in shooting three-pointers that if a team relies a lot on them and they're just not hitting him in one half, you can come back and bet on the second half, and there's some advantage in that.
All right, so we shift gears over to college football here for Saturday, and we begin with game 327-328, Akron and Bowling Green. And again, you're probably not going to hear about this game on too many of the other podcasts or any other videos that you watch here, but we're going to talk about it here, and not just because Brian and I, both alums of the University of Akron, but because I think this is kind of an interesting game. You've got really two bottom three teams in everybody's power ratings. I'm sure they're the bottom three in yours. Akron's 129, Bowling Green 128. And Bowling Green is a 6-point favorite here in this game.
Yeah, but I don't know if I'm going to touch it either way. I saw one of my colleagues, Rob Bino, put a tweet out yesterday that you could get rich by betting against Akron. I think he said they were 0-22-1 against the spread or some ridiculous number. And I tweeted out, it says, yeah, we're due. Because at this point, if teams are that bad where you've got Akron and Bowling Green here, there's better ways to spend your money. I mean, my number says that the line is probably right. In fact, I probably would have Bowling Green as a 7-point favorite here. That does not mean I'll be playing Akron. Akron's a team that may have Akron as the worst team at this point in college football. You know, UMass, they lose at UMass when they go as a road favorite. That was one of the funniest lines I've seen all season. This one's right up there. Don't trust either team. And when you've got teams on the fringes, I usually like to bet, like, for example, here, normally I would look at this and say, neither one of these teams knows how to win. So you would look to take the points with Akron. Problem is, I've seen enough Akron games. You know, I'm a glutton for punishment, I guess, because I watch the Akron games and they're just, they don't do anything right. And at this point, I cannot trust them. I know they want to win a game, but how do you bet on them? I've got nothing in this one. I don't want any part of either one of these teams. As much as I'd love to be able to take points with going against a Bowling Green team that was really struggled, I just can't do it.
That tweet that you're referencing here from at Rob Vino Sports, and again, you replied to this on Twitter, Akron is combined 1-22-1. They're 0-8 in the game, 0-7-1 in the first half, 1-7 in the second half, ATS. So the Zips have been an outright disaster, and I wound up taking Bowling Green here in this one. My line's more like 9.5, so I actually thought this line was going to go up. The fact that it hasn't kind of scares me a little bit. But that tweet kind of illustrates what's going on here with this Akron team, that they are so beyond awful, and everybody knows it, and they still can't cover a spread. You know, you would think that there would be some price inflation going against Akron at this point in time, and you said your line's 7, mine's 9.5. We're back down to 6 out there market-wide, but I mean, I wonder if this Akron team even cares. I wonder if they even want to win because, again, they know that this is a transitional year with a first-year head coach, whereas at least Bowling Green has shown me something. And I know that the week after the Toledo game, you know, Bowling Green kind of regressed back a little bit, but at least Bowling Green has shown me something. I had to take Bowling Green here.
Yeah, they had that one game, and I watched that game. They dominated Toledo, and The problem you get when you watch the games is you don't know which is the real deal. And the next week, Bowling Green gets blown out, and then Toledo gets blown out. And then we realize that it wasn't Bowling Green. It was Toledo that really didn't come to play that game. Nice to know ahead of time. We didn't know it until afterwards. So I'm sure Akron wants to win. Nobody wants to go through the season without winning a football game. You know, when they played Kent State, I thought that would be the game because that's their big rivalry. And Kent State just dominated them. And Kent's in a slightly different level than these two. But you let it off. The MAC has been really bad this year, and I known it was really bad this year. So I've been very happy with the lack of games I've given out in the MAC this season. Normally, a lot of my portfolio has MAC games in it, but I don't trust any of these teams. Now, once we get to bowls, if any of these MAC teams are in a bowl, and there will be a few, there'll be teams that I could fade. But by that point, everybody knows that the MAC is down. And so we'll have to see how it goes. But Acura's going to show up to win. I mean, they just don't have the talent.
Well, that being said, you do have a MAC game up on your card over at wagertalk.com for this weekend game, 335-336, Buffalo and Eastern Michigan, a play that you have over at WagerTalk, so I encourage everyone to go and check that one out. We jump down to game 353-354 here, Northern Illinois and Central Michigan. And I think this line kind of encapsulates everybody's thoughts on the MAC. You had Central Michigan, a two-point favorite. You've got Central Michigan, a one-point favorite at Bookmaker. You've got the game Pick'em at three different books offshore. And you also have Northern Illinois favored at some of the offshore books, including Pinnacle and Matchbook, which does suggest to a degree Northern Illinois the sharper of the two sides here in this game. But again, it almost seems like with a game like this and with this line at Pick'em, this just kind of tells us that we have no idea what we're going to get week in and week out from these MAC teams.
Yeah, I look over the line service and I've got, you know, Bookmaker's got Central as a one-point favorite and a few of the others have the Northern Illinois one-point favorite. Everybody else got to pick them. I make it Central Michigan one, so I'm in that same range. Northern's had better game scores. They played a little bit better ball, but I don't trust Northern. That's a team that's really struggled offensively all season long. The Lions, you know, I've looked at it from many angles, and the Lions really where I thought it was going to be. Not much value here. So I'd like to, you know, give you some great information, but I just don't have it. It to play against teams for me.
Yeah, I mean, my line is Central minus one as well. So you and I are in the same spot, and at least there's that. With all the inconsistency and the Jekyll and Hyde-ness of these MAC teams here, I'm happy to know that at least I've got these two power rated in the proper range. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's hard when you talk about the MAC and you try to find some angles on them. I will say this, something I talked about with Ralph Michaels yesterday, and something we can touch on very quickly here. You know, when these MAC teams pick up a seventh loss, I mean, you know, these teams don't have any delusions of grandeur about ever making a college football playoff. Obviously, you want to win the conference, but, you know, this has been a conference dominated by two or three teams the last several years. Really, your only end game in the MAC is making it to either the conference championship game or a bowl game. And it does feel like some of these MAC teams, even though they're kind of all beating each other, when they get that seventh loss and they're not going to a bowl game, you really do wonder about the psychology of those teams.
Yeah, you definitely do. And I listened to that podcast and Rob makes a great point in that regard. The thing is, even if some of these teams are bowl eligible, when you get down to this level, the Sun Belt and the MAC, even if they are bowl eligible, a lot of times they'll be passed over because they don't bring enough fans to the games. I think that, at least in my mind, works more for the Power Five schools in that regard. You know, you got Northern Illinois has already lost five games. Their victory is a FCS game against Illinois State. They win at Ohio at 39-36. And by the way, Ohio was a team we've talked about a lot early on this season, how they thought they were going to have a cakewalk through the schedule, and they haven't. Actually, Ohio's starting to play a little bit better ball now. That's one of the teams that I'm looking to find spots to play on. Don't know if I'll do anything here, but that's one that is playing a little bit better ball than what they played earlier. But they lose it. They beat Akron 49-0, which is what it is. But Central Michigan, Toledo, Eastern Michigan, and Western Michigan coming up. This is a team that's normally going to bowl games. A lot of these teams in the MAC don't. So right now with the five losses, a loss here could definitely really keep them out of any bowl, even with six losses. So we'll have to see, but yeah, that's a great point, is you always want to look at the schedule and see what the, I think it matters more when a team comes into the season with those expectations. We see it all the time in the NFL where a team comes in, they were supposed to win their division. All of a sudden they're not going to win their division. And you see them fade, the veterans fade as the season goes on. A team like an Akron or a Bowling Green did not come into the season expecting to go to a bowl. A team like Northern Illinois did.
All right, so we shift gears over to the NFL here. And, you know, we've kind of had this discussion at a few different points throughout the show about teams that should have won and didn't, and maybe they're pretty good play-on spots the following week. That brings us to game 457, 458 here, Chicago and Philadelphia. And the Bears should have won last week. And not only that, they should have covered last week. But they have that one-point loss to the Chargers. And I guess turnabout is kind of fair play because the Chargers are a team notorious for losing games that they're supposed to win. They finally get one back here last week against the Bears. The question is, can you really take the Bears here this week against an Eagles team coming off of maybe its most complete and most impressive performance of the year, now a 5-point favorite hosting Chicago?
Yeah, I only had one play last week, and that was Buffalo against Philadelphia. And it's rare that you can watch maybe two possessions in a game and realize you've got the wrong side, and that's what it was last week in Buffalo. Buffalo was obviously the wrong side in that game, and Philadelphia's looked good. But Philadelphia is one of those teams, a lot of veterans on this team, and they've had many games this year where they've struggled. Most of it has been because of injuries. So when they get healthy, that's a team you're looking to back. After playing Chicago, they played New England, Seattle. So they've got a rough string here. They've gone Minnesota, Dallas, Buffalo, Chicago, New England, Seattle. That's been a tough road for Philadelphia. Chicago's one of those teams that has found ways to lose, as you pointed out, losing last week by a point to the Chargers in a game that they, believe it or not, they had 15 more first downs in that game than the Chargers did, and they lose that game. That's something you don't really see. But that just shows you what Chicago is. Chicago's not a team that can stretch the field. They've got to grind it out. They're like an Iowa or one of those teams in college football, like Michigan State, that offense isn't going to come easy. And playing a team with the talent that Philadelphia has is going to make it a little bit tough. Philadelphia's had problems with their defensive backs, had a lot of injuries all season long. But I don't know if Chicago has that ability to beat them in the passing game. You take a look at the numbers for Trubisky. His quarterback rating is only 81.4, 5 touchdowns, 3 interceptions on the season. That's not really what you're looking to get out of a quarterback that's got that breakaway opportunity. Philadelphia just played 3 straight games on the road, now coming back home for 3 straight. I lean with Philadelphia here, but Chicago's been finding ways to lose. And, you know, if you've lost to Oakland just a few weeks ago, that tells you that you're being outcoached. And in Oakland, you know, say what you want about Gruden and the way he does things over there. Oakland's really impressed me. And I never thought I'd say it, but, you know, I look for times to play the Raiders at this point because I like the changes that they've made there and what they've done. And I haven't seen that all season long. I definitely didn't expect that coming into the season. So it's the Eagles or nothing for me, but that's a brutal stretch of games that the Eagles are on right now.
Speaking of the Raiders, let's touch on that game here as we take a look at game 465, 466. Oakland, a 2 or 2.5 point favorite, found a way to cover against Houston. I've already had my Bill O'Brien rant here for this week, but this is an interesting one because Detroit did let the Giants in the back door, but by and large, played pretty well, had some distractions, had some things going on with their secondary. They traded Quandre Diggs. There was some talk that maybe they would trade Darius Slay. So there was a lot going on with that Detroit team, yet they rallied, found a way to get that victory. Now they make the long trip out west to Oakland, again, where the Raiders are a 2-point favorite.
Yeah, I think the Raiders are slightly cheap here. You take a look at the game grades on the season. Detroit's at 82.0. The Raiders at 82.6. If you add in a 2-point home field for that, maybe 2.5-point home field, you're looking at the Raiders 3. So it's a slight edge there from a number standpoint, at least in my mind, on the Raiders. Raiders coming off back-to-back losses. But you take a look at the schedule that they've had, and it's been some crazy going the trip to London and all. You know, they haven't been back home since they played Kansas City in week 2. So there are going to be some Raiders fans at the game that are going to be excited to be there. And it's always a tough place to play when you've got the fans that Oakland has. First of two back-to-back games here for Detroit coming off of that Giants victory. But they lost, as you mentioned, three games before that. Close games, lose to Kansas City by four, lose to Green Bay by one, and then that Minnesota game where they lose by 12. But Detroit's been involved in a lot of tight games this year. It wouldn't surprise me if this is another one of those that comes down to a field goal or 4 points coming down to the final score in this game. Even though I'm not a huge Patricia fan, I think he's done a nice job with Detroit here. So these are two teams that I think are under the radar a little bit. I'd rather play on them when they played somebody else, but a slight lean to Oakland here.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at WagerTalk.com. We covered a lot of ground here on today's show, and you guys do the same over there at WagerTalk.
Yeah, we do. We do a terrific job. We've got a lot of guys who specialize in certain sports. Carmen Bianco will be in from Canada to talk some soccer today. And we've got two or three guys that do soccer do very well. We've got a guy in, that does a lot of – we've got two guys, I believe, that do the MMA, do a fine job on that. So we've got guys that do just about every sport out there. Obviously, I handicap what I'm good at, and I don't – I just take their advice on things like that. But I do want to touch on my success on 5% plays, 31-11 on 5% plays. I've got my first NBA 5% play up right now up on the site. If it doesn't win, we put 150% of what you had to pay for that play back into your account. So it's really a no-brainer. You can get that over right now at WagerTalk.com, our first NBA 5% play, 31-11 on those, and that's for the entire year. Very selective on our top plays, and it's worked out very well for us.
Well, of course, once again, make sure you follow at B Leonard Sports on Twitter. Get those second half plays and also all the other insights that Brian shares on his Twitter page. Brian Leonard, professional handicapper, WagerTalk.com. As always, my friend, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds terrific. Everybody have a great week.
There you go. There's professional handicapper Brian Leonard, once again, over at WagerTalk.com and at B Leonard Sports on Twitter. All right, one more guest, one more segment here for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, VSiN host and contributor to the Point Spread Weekly newsletter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you, sir?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time, as always. And you and I both know how valuable time is here in this business. The NBA, a little over a week old. College basketball, 6 days away. Obviously, college football and the NFL still going. Not to mention the NHL, if you handicap that, and all the other sports, NASCAR, MMA, and so on and so forth. There's still a lot going on. But I do want to touch on a little bit of basketball with you here, looking at the NBA and college basketball. Now that we've seen about a week in the NBA, are you starting to get a little bit more confident with what we're working with?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, confident being, I guess, a relative term. Still early on in the season. But I think, look, we always kind of have this. We always have some teams that surprise a little bit and some teams that disappoint a little bit. Just looking at tonight's card, Minnesota 3-0, off to a really good start. And Karl-Anthony Towns, I mean, if he was on a team that was a legit top four team in one of the two conferences, he'd be one of the MVP front runners. He's putting up great numbers and playing well. But they're off to a 3-0 start. By on the same token, on the other side, Pacers, we know they're without Oladipo, but they're 0-3 to start the season. Two losses to Detroit already, a bad performance in Cleveland on Saturday night, a Cleveland team that we don't expect to win very many games and that may trade arguably their best asset, Kevin Love, at some point this season. So we don't know how many games they're really going to win, but I think, you know, what I'm still doing with the NBA is, I guess, still looking at different spots and just different scheduling spots and looking at teams that maybe played overtime. Like there was one last night where I did end up taking Dallas and they got the win outright. Denver goes and gets the win at Sacramento on the road, and they were kind of like right inside the number, but they got fouled, so they ended up covering. Sacramento misses a late, like, 5-foot point-blank shot, and Denver ends up getting the cover, and then they have to go back-to-back at home So even though it was at home, I thought it was a kind of a difficult spot. Dallas ends up getting there. So you're still kind of really looking at schedule spots. But even early in the season, they're not as pronounced because, look, these guys haven't played a ton of games yet. So these guys aren't as worn out on like a back-to-back or a four games in five nights as they may be 2 or 3 months from now.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. And that Dallas and Denver game is a pretty good illustration of, you know, why you want to look for those situational spots. Denver, 61 points in the first half, 45 points in the second half on that back-to-back, playing a pretty good Dallas team there in that second game. So a good example of looking for some of those situational spots that are out there. And we'll stay on the hardwood, but we'll shift over to college basketball here, beginning, of course, on Tuesday night. So when we talk next Wednesday, it'll be after opening night, 140 some odd games for opening night. What are some of your, I like the groan there. I certainly understand that. What are some of your early college basketball betting approaches? Because again, the NBA, we know a lot of the personnel, you know, some of the draft picks come in and do very well, but by and large, we know who's who. We know a lot of these coaches, 353 teams, bunch of new head coaches, tons of roster turnover, whether it's guys leaving early for the draft, guys losing their eligibility, or the transfer market, which is very, very active in college hoops. But how do you sort through it all early in the year?
Yeah, it used to be, and I was groaning there because it used to be you kind of gradually made your way into the season. You'd have a few games on opening night and then gradually just a couple more, and they really, you know, worked you up to, I guess, a full slate of games gradually. But having a 140-some games on opening night, it's just, it's absolutely ridiculous, and the season starts so early. It used to be kind of the week before Thanksgiving is when it would start, and now it's starting on November 5th. And, I mean, you just don't get a break between sports. It's like if you're a baseball bettor, okay, it's done, and then you're right into college basketball. So it's the world just keeps turning, I guess, in terms of sports and sports betting. But I guess what I do for college basketball, look, I'm going to be looking at some of the exhibitions and some of the secret scrimmages. You don't want to take too much out of it, but that's what you're going to be looking at to maybe get an idea of who the rotation is or who they're trying to start in terms of the new starters. The returning starters angle, I think, is a lot. I mean, it's something you certainly want to look at, but you don't want to overplay because it's not like the odds makers don't know that. Okay, that's going to be like totally priced into the line, the four or five returning starters. But the returning starters I mainly look at, I guess, would be more of the guards. I'm looking at teams that are going to have junior and senior guards that have been multiple year starters for these teams to kind of, play that angle, especially when you have those at like a middle type major school that have experienced guard play, because I think that that's going to matter. At least early on, they're going to know what systems they're running. And then when you get freshmen in there, especially teams with a lot of freshmen, albeit talented ones, it takes them usually about a year to learn how to play defense at the college level. There's always an adjustment from high school or prep school to college. So when you're playing a lot of those teams, most of those kids are going to make more mistakes defensively than they're going to make on offense. So those are little things that I look at. I mean, probably the first week I will just be like a spot player, like anything else, where I'm not going to say, okay, I've got power ratings here and I'm just going to play everything off the power ratings and every discrepancy. And that's not really how it works. It's a long season. So you have to kind of gradually work your way into it.
And I think what's so hard about early season college basketball is, you know, some of these teams play just absolute cupcake schedules. They pad their non-conference numbers. They get to conference play. We all know who they are, and we play on those strength of schedule discrepancies. Other teams early on in college basketball, they will challenge themselves, or some of those programs, we've seen Long Beach State do this for a long time. UT Arlington is a program that has done this in the past. They will play a meat grinder of a non-conference schedule and just load it up. They won't be at home for weeks at a time and just play all these difficult non-conference games. But some teams will kind of, you know, vacillate between playing a really good team, a couple of bad teams, a D3 team, you know, a really low major team, get back into playing another good team. So I think that's something you want to look at here in college basketball too, in the sense that some of these games where teams are big favorites will almost be experimentation games, trying to figure out who your depth guys are and what rotations work the best for these coaches.
For sure. And I mean, another thing that obviously dictates the scheduling so much is now the television. I mean, what you used to not see, I think they call this thing the Champions Classic, where next Wednesday or Tuesday, I forget the day, where you're going to have Michigan State playing Kentucky and Kansas and Duke playing right away. So those are huge games. I mean, and we kind of saw it last year with the overreaction. We remember in Indianapolis when Duke absolutely smashed Kentucky. And that was a young team that wasn't ready at that point. And I think people got kind of down on him. And that perception can last a little bit while with the team when you know you even have a talented team like Kentucky, because they get beat so badly early on. And then that gives you a little bit of value. So, yeah, some of these teams that are young are going to very much experiment and probably be big home favorites, get out to a lead, get kind of close to the number, and then not get over the hump. So those are situations you definitely want to exploit.
And I know something you like to exploit in college basketball, and something you've always done across all the different markets, is playing derivatives, playing the first halves and the second halves. And I think early in the college basketball season, this makes a lot of sense to do. Look at those box scores during the games. If you see a team went, 10 for 12 from three-point range in the first half, built a big lead, it's probably not going to continue in the second half. So those are angles you can look for here at this time of the year too.
Yeah, without question. I think that's definitely something that you're going to be wanting to keep an eye on in terms of those spots. And then these teams that, maybe the game before they go play a conference tournament, I don't think you're going to see the conference tournaments really for another couple weeks. But if you got that getaway game, like before they go to Bahamas or Bermuda or wherever, Virgin Islands, Maui. So those games sometimes can be a little bit shaky of a spot of a team, because they know that they're going to a tournament where they're going to play better competition. So those are little spots you also want to look for.
And not even that, but not just the better competition. I mean, obviously destinations are always fun to go to. And if you make a run in those tournaments, or even if you don't, 3 games in 3 days, 3 games in 4 days, something like that. So those coaches going to really monitor the minutes of their players in that getaway game. So I think that's a great angle to look at. And we will have some of those spots coming up here as we go throughout the month of November. Let's shift gears to college football here as we stay in the collegiate ranks, but go from the hardwood to the gridiron. And I thought it was kind of interesting. You said over a few games you were looking at here for this week, and you seem like you're kind of on an island a little bit with this one. Game 323-324, Michigan and Maryland. This line's gone from 17.5 to as high as 21.5. You're thinking about going on the other side, though.
Yeah, I am. And it's not a side that I really love. And the fact is, I don't know if I really want to be on this team, and the fact that they've come back to earth. But it's Maryland now getting 21 in the hook. And really, this is kind of just a weird spot because, look, Michigan probably at that point got undervalued last week. Notre Dame really took the money. The narrative was about Harbaugh looking at NFL jobs, and then the fact that they were 1-10 against top 10 teams under Jim Harbaugh. So they get another top 10 team. So you saw Notre Dame end up taking the money. I know I had a conversation on one of our Green Zone shows, and we had Matt Lindemann and Mo Pearson on from Circa Sports, and Matt put his number, and they're putting the opening lines out there. So you're brave, and you're also taking some risks. It's good publicity for their book, but he had put out like Michigan -4. And actually his cohort that does a lot of the college football with him, Mo Pearson, who's at Heed These Takes on Twitter, he was like, I think Michigan's going to win by double digits here. I think they're going to win by 2 scores. And people are like, oh, my God, no way. And he got some flack on Twitter. And it's like, well, it ended up being not 2 scores. It ended up being 4 scores. So he's just kind of being nice to the Irish fans. But, I think that was a spot for Michigan where they kind of took out their frustrations, because the season I don't think it's been a bad season, but they've disappointed. I mean, they lost to Wisconsin, they lost to Penn State, and this was a chance for them, and they were focused, and they took out their frustration, and they ran up a couple extra scores at the end, so when the game was absolutely well in hand. So they kind of dumped out all of that frustration last week, and now you go on the road, and they're going to have a bye week coming up before they get Michigan State and then eventually the big game with Ohio State. So, you know, this is kind of a little bit of an iffy spot. I mean, should they lay over Maryland? Absolutely. But now the numbers get into a point where you'd almost want to come back on the Terps here, because we've seen Michigan a little bit on the road. They against inferior opponents, they jumped out big to Illinois, and then all of a sudden Illinois fights back and makes it a one-score game before Michigan puts it away. And I could maybe see that. Maybe just a little bit of a sloppy effort at Maryland. They're going there. Now they're laying a huge number. Everybody bets them off that huge performance last week to like, okay, Michigan's really got it going now. So you're just kind of playing against a little bit of the perception. I mean, they're going to win this game and win it relatively comfortably. But eventually, you know, that's the thing about really doing a mixture. And you always hear people say, oh, you don't bet teams, you bet numbers. Well, that's partially true. But you also bet teams. It's really a bit of both. I mean, neither one of them are right. It's like you're both right in the fact that, okay, yeah, I don't, you know, Michigan at the opening number may have been the right number, but now at 21.5, over three touchdowns, maybe Maryland here is at the right number. So that's what, I mean, that's what it's all about, is just being able to take not necessarily a team, but just taking a decent number, even if it's going against the other side.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said there, and not for nothing. I mean, look, you've got a Maryland team that nobody wants to take. And a lot of times the team that nobody wants to take ends up covering. I mean, look at what happened last week with Carolina and San Francisco. Just about everybody was on Carolina, it felt like.
Right.
And San Francisco just coasted. And, I mean, that happens. You know, we do see that. And maybe that's what we get here in this Michigan versus Maryland game. A good breakdown, a good handicap by you there. How about game 363, 364 here? Army and Air Force. And this one, Air Force minus 14.5. Obviously, the option going head-to-head. Total of 45 here. A lot of running expected. A lower scoring game expected. What is it you like about the dog here? Which, it's a dog that's been very disappointing so far this season.
Yeah, they really have. I mean, this was an Army team that was 11-2 last season, and people forgot about that. And it's all of a sudden you kind of look at it as like, wow, this team won 11 games, and they're 3-5. They're going to have to get a little bit hot down the stretch. They don't have a margin for error necessarily to make a bowl game. And I thought the number was a little bit high. I think kind of what you're seeing with Army is that the quarterback play has been disappointing. They ended up having to use three of them, even though they rallied late. They could never get over the hump of San Jose State. And then you have an Air Force team that I thought was super impressive last week against Utah State. They easily covered. And I was just looking at the box score of that game. Air Force had the ball for 45 of the 60 minutes. And that is a huge, I know time of possession gets it's not as important as it used to be with all these teams running spread offenses. And it's like, well, if you can go down there and score in two minutes, you know, okay, it doesn't really matter when your offense is so good and you're going to score all the time. But the fact that Air Force had the ball for 45 minutes, I mean, both of these teams, we know they run essentially the same offense in the triple option, and they're both top five nationally in terms of rushing offense. But I just thought the number was a little high. I think Army has been, and maybe getting on the road could be a good thing for them. They disappointed. I think they ended up being a little bit less than 10-point favorites over San Jose State. And look, San Jose State is a team in Air Force's conference who is an improved team this year. They're 4-4. So the coach out there is making improvements, but they're still not on the Air Force level. So it's like, okay, you're going to lose to a team in a conference at home. How are you going to go on the road the next week and compete or potentially even win against a better team? So I thought, you know, if you were laying maybe 14 or less, that's another one of those games, then perhaps Air Force is the right side. But you're getting a little bit more. You're getting 14 and a half, a couple 15s out there. And I think this game probably has two-way action where you have some guys on a good number on one side and some guys on a good number on another side. And look, this is kind of maybe almost the season here for Army. If they fall here, they're 3-6. They're going to get the Army-Navy game at the end of the year with a much better Navy team than we saw last season. So this is one where they really got to perform and they're really up against it. And you're going to bank on the character, I guess, of the Academy kids, even though you have two Academies in this game, that they're going to put up a good effort here.
Well, and something else that's always interesting about these types of games, and I understand that this is a significant rivalry, the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy, you know, hanging in the balance with this three-game series. And, you know, it's so interesting, too, when you get these non-conference games in the middle of conference season, and that's not to say that Air Force is going to overlook Army by any means. I mean, again, the Service Academy's a lot of bragging rights on the line. But this is an Air Force team that's playing pretty well in the Mountain West here so far. They actually have a chance to win this Mountain Division. They're going to need some help in order to do it because Boise State has that tiebreaker. But still, I mean, like you said, this is this game and the Army-Navy game, that's it for Army. Air Force does have some other considerations down the line.
Right. And another thing I'm looking at, too, is that Air Force has not had a bye week since September 7th. So this is like their eighth straight week out there playing ball. And look, they're disciplined and they're used to this stuff. And then honestly too, you look on the Army side, they've had one bye week. They had the bye week on September 28th. So they've played a few in a row, but not as many as Air Force. And I just think when you have teams that run the same offense, it's very hard to get a wide-ranging type of score, even though you've seen some double-digit wins and losses certainly in this series. Army has won two in a row, so you know Air Force is going to be focused. That's the first time Army had won two in a row in the series since 1977, 1978. I just thought that the number was a bit too high here.
All right, one more college game to touch on with you here. 371-372, neutral site game in Jacksonville, Georgia, and Florida. And I'm glad you mentioned this game because this line's actually gone up from 3.5 to 6.5 out there. I feel like I'm kind of getting to a point where I've got to play Florida, but you're looking at the Georgia side a little bit.
Yeah, I am. And I think, look, Georgia has kind of been the out of sight, out of mind team. And essentially, we know with the slate this week, and I'm having trouble even finding a lot of games on the slate. This is kind of the calm before the storm week where you get maybe some dud games. And then we know next week we have Alabama LSU. You have an undefeated battle with Penn State, Minnesota. You get a lot better card next week for Saturday, November 9th than you get this week. But this is really the most important game in terms of a college football playoff because essentially, it's a loser leave town match, to use an old pro wrestling term, and one's going to be out of the college football playoff and essentially out of the SEC East. So you would think that the winner of this is going to get a spot in Atlanta in the SEC championship game. And look, I think Dan Mullen's done a really good job with Florida, and I think he's going to get them back to where they're probably a perennial top 10 program again. But it's just a case of I think Georgia. And I think this is Kirby's like his fourth year there, where maybe Georgia's just a little bit ahead with their program than Florida from a talent standpoint. Georgia's got five stars pretty much at every single position. And you've got a Florida team that's still making their way. And look, they're still going to probably end up as a top 10 or right around that team for the season. But I do like Georgia here because they come in looking less impressive. Of course, the home loss to South Carolina, and then they had that tropical storm the next week where they had Kentucky. If you remember that game, it was 0-0 at halftime, Kentucky at Georgia down in Athens, and then Georgia eventually pulled away and won 21-0. And it feels to me like Georgia is just kind of sitting on a good performance here. that they haven't really shown. I mean, look, they got out a little bit on Notre Dame, but never could really put them away. Notre Dame made a late rally and were able to compete down the stretch and actually had an outside chance to win the game, even though Georgia pretty much had it in hand from the get-go. But this is a team that I think has a better defense. They're a top 10 national defense. And I think that it's tough to really score on this team. And really, Georgia, when they lost that game to South Carolina, it was because of the mistakes from Jake Fromm. He had a bad game. He had 4 turnovers, 3 interceptions, and a fumble. So really about what it's about for Georgia is playing that consistently good defense that they play, running the ball very well with Swift and company, which Georgia always runs the ball very well, and then having Jake Fromm just not make mistakes. And I think that if you look, they just have the better team in terms of the talent. And the number looks big, and obviously being a numbers game, if it's going to get the 7, then yeah, or you can buy it to 7, then yeah, maybe Florida's worth a shot. But I still like Georgia at 6 here.
All right, so we move over to the NFL side for a few minutes. I know there are a couple of things you're looking at over there, and I'm curious to get your take on this. Houston and Jacksonville playing over in London, and we know that there can be some shenanigans throughout the game. Obviously, weather conditions can play a big factor over there across the pond, too. This is essentially a home game for Jacksonville since they're always there. Houston there for the first time. I thought it was interesting that of the things that you can bet in this game, you sent me Jacksonville over. Which seems like there's, you know, maybe a little bit more of an advantage to just taking Jacksonville, given their familiarity with the situation. But why the over here?
And I still may end up on Jacksonville. And I think that this is a really good teaser candidate on Sunday to tease this up through the 3 and the 7 into about 8 or 8.5. There's a couple of those teaser games out there. I think Pittsburgh potentially getting over a touchdown and home on a teaser to Indianapolis, who's played nothing but close games this year in terms of their wins. Those are a couple that really make a lot of sense. But I went with the over here. If you recall, this was, I believe, week 2 when they played, and it was 13-12 where the Houston Texans won. So obviously a low-scoring game. That was Gardner Minshew's first start, and it was his first start on the road in a division game. So it's not surprising that that was such a low-scoring game. And the Watt injury, I think, is important. I don't think it's as important as we would think, because I think the long perception is that J.J. Watt has been the best player on the Houston Texans. Well, the most important and best player on the Houston Texans is Deshaun Watson. And I think he's really proving that this year and then the previous years. The injuries I'm worried about more for the Texans is their secondary. They got 3 starters that are highly questionable for this game. Bradley Roby, Jonathan Joseph, both have hamstring injuries. Tashawn Gibson, the safety, has a back concern. Lonnie Johnson in concussion protocol, another corner. They have a lot of injuries in the secondary, and that I think is concerning. And they didn't quite go over the closing number with the Raiders last week, even though that was an over game. And then you look on the Jacksonville side on defense, DJ Hayden questionable with the neck injury. They've got a couple linebackers with injuries. So I just think that you might have 2 banged up teams. And look, this is ticked down from the opener. It was 47, and now you're seeing as low as 46. And it just looks like with these 2 teams that they typically play under games, but I think that there could be value to the over. I mean, you want to keep an eye on the injury reports and the practice reports, of course. But if you got a lot of these guys on these defenses hurt, I think you can see some points in this game in London.
All right, we got a signature game here on Sunday Night Football. New England and Baltimore. New England, 3.5 or 4-point favorite out there. I went against the Patriots again last week with Cleveland. Back-to-back weeks losing, trying to fade the Patriots and this historic pace that they've been on defensively. This week, they get Baltimore on the road off a bye. So this is a very interesting spot, maybe a measuring stick game of sorts for New England, and you're kind of wondering how they get through it.
Yeah, and I mean, I you would hope maybe a 4 would show to get more value on Baltimore, but I do kind of like this side. This is going to be that old overly used cliche, but a very accurate one. This is going to be, I think, that old pros versus Joes game. And look, I played Cleveland last week as well, and it didn't get there, and I had top number with 13. They really, if you watch that game, and I know that you did, they should have covered that game, Cleveland. They got behind with those turnovers. They actually, I think, ended up slightly out-yarding the Patriots. It's not like the Patriots went through them offensively. And really, if you look offensively, they've been okay, but they haven't been great, the Patriots. And now you're playing Baltimore, and look, this isn't the vintage Baltimore defense of the past, but I think it's not a thing where Baltimore, like in past years, where they have to rely on their defense to bail them out. I think that the Patriots do have a very tough preparation job for Lamar Jackson this week, because Lamar Jackson, you can only prepare so much, because he does have the ability to make plays that you can't just prepare for, where it's just like, you know what, I'm going to get the corner, and I'm going to get the edge, and I'm going to keep moving the chains, and I'm just going to beat your guy to the spot. And it's like, you play it exactly right. And we've seen it over the years. I remember seeing this in the Seattle game. It's like, well, they played it right, but he just gets the corner, and he just faster than you. He ends up getting the first downs and keeping drives from stalling. So that's, I think, the tough nut for the Patriots here is, the numbers are impressive, and you got to give them credit, but they haven't faced the murderer's row of quarterbacks. Even the good teams that they've played, like Buffalo, well, this is still a Buffalo team that's struggling offensively. This is still a Buffalo team with Josh Allen in his second year and still developing as a quarterback, and Jackson's in his second year too, but his athletic ability, I think, is something that they just have not seen at this point. And you know, eventually the Patriots, I think, even though they're winning and they're winning comfortably, even in the Jets game, it was the defense was so good, and they rattled Sam Darnold early, and he said he was seeing ghosts, and it just got out of hand. But now you're going to start to get into some taller cotton where you're playing some tougher teams that have the ability to put up points. I know that they're going to have Philadelphia down the line here in November. They're going to have Dallas. I mean, these are capable teams offensively. And I think Baltimore is too. And maybe it's me being stubborn and bettors being stubborn to try to fade the Patriots, but it just seems almost too easy. I mean, look, bettors are going to keep riding the team until they do it. I mean, that's what the casual and recreational bettors are going to do. They're going to keep betting the Patriots team until they lose. But this could be, I think, very much a spot where they do so.
Yeah, I like the angle you brought up that, you know, the improvisation of Lamar Jackson. I mean, that's kind of what you need. I mean, to a degree, that's sort of the blueprint you're looking for to beat one of these teams. You know, and you kind of wonder, I mean, obviously San Francisco just boat raced Carolina, but let's say it's Cam Newton. You know, Cam Newton in his prime where he's able to run around a little bit. It is harder to game plan for that, does slow that pass rush down, and maybe to a degree it kind of limits the effectiveness, at least as much as you can, of that New England secondary, because you can only cover for so long. So maybe this is the right type of spot, maybe everything coming together for Baltimore here, especially being off of a bye with some of their defensive injuries earlier on in the season, now on the back burner, maybe this is the spot where New England does end up going down. Wes Reynolds over at Wes Reynolds is the number one on Twitter, and at VSiN, a host and contributor to the Point Spread Weekly. Plenty of bylines, man. Plenty of spots to find you. How can people do that?
Yeah, they can obviously listen to me over the airwaves on the Green Zone. And most of the time, our schedule, Monday, 6 to 10 Pacific. That's usually during about the second half of the Monday night game and then beyond. And then Thursday, 6 to 10 Pacific. Friday, 6 to 10 Pacific, and then on the weekend, we're usually in kind of that late window of the late afternoon games, 2 to 6 Pacific on Saturday, 3 to 7 on Sunday, and then at vsin.com, you can find all the different trials and ways that you can subscribe to Point Spread Weekly, and then getting the various betting guides. I'm going to be part of the college basketball betting guide, which we're going to release next week. Also, look at that NBA betting guide. I didn't do much with that, but Jonathan Von Tobel and everybody that contributed to that did a really good job. And there really aren't a lot of NBA betting guides on the market. So you're going to find some good information in there.
Once again, make sure you follow Wes on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, appreciate your time as always, bud. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, always a pleasure, sir.
There you go. There's Wes Reynolds again. Find him on VSiN and at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Brad Powers, professional handicapper, will join me to talk a lot of college football and some NFL. Then to finish up the Thursday show, I'll talk about the games that we didn't get to earlier on in the week here on Bang the Book Radio. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.